What happens when you return home after 2 years and have nothing but technical difficulties trying to play a game? Well, you punt it to next week and you talk nerdy to me. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to your new favorite show, The More You Nerd, where we dive into the stuff that me and Miles want to talk about randomly for the next little bit, because we had some technical difficulties getting Night in the Woods to work on some stuff, so we are giving it an extra week to make sure we have enough time to really talk about it and play enough to do that. So, my name's Drew, and my partner in crime, Miles. How are you, buddy?
I am doing all right. I'm the one with the said technical difficulties. And I'll probably talk about it a little bit next week when we talk about the actual game. I'm excited. I always love doing Talk Nerdy to Me, even if I have no idea what I'm going to talk about, because it's one of the times that I don't feel that constricted about something. Like I think a lot of people might find the idea of just kind of free-flowing daunting, but honestly, just getting to hang out with you, bud, is like legit. Like 9 times out of 10, like half the time when we do Cosmic Crypt, we're usually too tired, it's too late in the evening for us to chit chat. Last night was a rare occurrence, but yeah, it's not often that we just get to do off-the-cuff stuff these days. So I don't know. I really love doing these.
Me too. I'm gonna kick it off because I have a lot of stuff to talk about.
Oh, really?
We may have a whole different plan for a couple of months from now based on the things that I'm gonna talk about. Not really. But so I haven't gotten a chance to talk to anybody about Mobile Suit Gundam GQUUUUUX. GQUX, as it is sometimes said.
Do not spoil. It has not come here. It's not going to come here I am. And I can't watch it until like April 8th, I think, on
April
Amazon.
8th. So it was announced that it's going to be Amazon Prime, of all places, is going to have it.
So weird.
April 8th is when it's going to start. But I mean, this is, I was interested in this show. The only thing that we had really known about it at first was the design of the main Gundam, the GQUX itself. Which I'm going to be honest.
I remember you were really on the fence when this show was first announced.
Well, so let me say the only,
which
thing
is like how you are anytime a Gundam show is announced.
It's not even that, because I was way into Witch for Mercury. Once I found out what it was, you know, like in this, when they had only showed the suit, it's like, okay, I think I actually dislike this a lot. But then they announced who was making it, and Studio Kara, it's Hideaki Anno's studio that did the rebuild of Evangelion stuff. The director of this series is the guy who directed Fooly Cooly and also co-wrote the script, and Hideaki Anno himself worked on some of the script. And then it started to leak out with some accidental postings of what the show was going to be about. And that was like, oh yes, please. And then they showed some characters, and the character designs are by the same artist who does the character designs for the Pokemon games. And once you know that, it's like, oh yeah, I could totally see it. But but knowing what the show was going to kind of be, because we still don't know a ton, but at least knowing what the kind of logline premise of the show is, I have been so excited since. And they have been doing, and it may still be, by the time you listen to this, you may still be able to go see it. I want to see it a second time. They have put out the Mobile Suit Gundam GQUX Beginning, which is a 90-minute movie, basically, that seems to have something from the first three episodes of the show.
I love this because I miss when this was done. Like, remember when, like, Batman Beyond and Superman the Animated Series and stuff came out, and they would release a VHS tape, like a home release, as a movie, but it's really just like the first three episodes, you know, edited together in a certain form or fashion, maybe with some extra footage, maybe not, and delivered it as a movie. And no one really does that anymore. And I love that this is kind of what we're getting preemptively.
Weirdly, anime has been doing this.
I know anime has.
A Dan to Dan was apparently had a movie edit. I don't know if it came to the U.S., but it was definitely something in
I
Japan.
Still need to catch up on that show because I love the first couple episodes.
Oh, it's so good. And we're honestly hopefully getting close to the second half of season one.
Yeah. And I know they said that it's coming soon, I think.
Yeah. I think I'd heard April, but I'd also heard May or June. So I don't know.
Yeah. But still soon. Very soon.
Yeah. That show's so good. Good Lord. But yeah, I don't know how, like, I want to just say what it is, because I don't know how much you actually know about this show.
Nothing. I saw the initial teaser or trailer that we shared on Discord a while back. That is all I have seen. I've seen nothing since then, certainly not since the movie's come out. And yeah, I'm trying to keep it that way.
Well, I mean, I've got a little devilish smile.
I know you do. Also, I want to be clear, this is the same guy who, like, wants to spoiler tag everything in Discord,
and I, like, do spoiler tag everything in Discord, and you
including
make,
things that have no business being spoiler tagged.
People don't know that Rosebud is the sled at the end of Citizen Kane. Oh no.
I will slap you so hard.
Oh no.
I will drive the 2.5 hours to your house to slap you.
I gave away the spoiler to Citizen Kane. Oh no. But yeah, I mean, what I'll say, I mean, what do you think it's going to be about? That's actually maybe a more fun thing. What do you think?
I don't know, because the initial trailer doesn't really give you a lot of story beats. We get a handful of like moments, but nothing that really, to me, gives me enough connective tissue to tell me what the show is about. I typically have enough faith in this franchise to at least give them a shot of, I mean, because this is clearly seems to be an AU story. No.
So let's talk about what Hideaki Anno has been working on for the last several years of his life.
The Shin stuff. Okay, that's still kind of. That's still kind of.
What if I told you that this show is Shin Gundam?
I mean, I would not be opposed to that. It's certainly interesting, but he's not like, he just did some script doctoring, right? He's not directly involved, right?
He did some script doctoring. It's his studio,
right?
He is not, and I believe he wrote some of it, or at least worked on the script,
which can be a good or bad thing. I loved Shin Ultraman. And I loved Shin Kamen Rider. I really like Shin Godzilla. Like, I think as a political Japanese monster movie, it's phenomenal. As a Godzilla movie, it's fine. And that's my biggest problem. If you want to hear my thoughts on that, you can listen to Kaiju vs. History. We recently did that. I have really enjoyed and I loved the rebuild of the Evangelion.
Which I still need to watch Rebuild of Evangelion. I haven't done that. Maybe that's something we'll do for the show at some point. But
goody. Yeah. I just did it for the other show.
Oh, that's right. We'll give it a couple of years.
Give me a year or two. I will be happy to revisit it because it's my preferred way of watching Evangelion. But yeah. Actually, I'd be fine watching all again. But I had to like cram them. I watched them all in 1 week.
Oh, wow.
To do all in like, we did like 4 episodes in like 1 day.
Yeah, that's pretty rough. That's pretty rough. So, but yeah. So, watching this movie, and they have said that portions of this that we saw in the movie may appear differently in the series. And it's hard to discuss that without spoiling stuff, so I'm not going to. But there is, let me just say, the first half hour kind of sets up the world that we're in.
Cool.
And the out and the next hour is what basically feels like the first two episodes of the show. And while those two things in the movie feel very different from each other, I adored every single second of it. And the second that we get to what the actual show is going to be, and the music of the show kicks in, and the art styles and character styles come in, I am so ready for it. I'm so excited. It's less than a month now that I have to wait to get some of this stuff. I want to see the movie again. I might do that this week if I get away with it, but I don't think I'll get away with it.
So is there a prologue like Witch from Mercury, basically?
So that is the thing. There is sort of a prologue portion. We don't know, however, whether there will be a prologue episode, like an episode zero, like Witch from Mercury had, or whether that prologue stuff will be broken up and seeded throughout the series itself. We just don't know. But yeah,
I feel like Gundam the last couple of years has been kind of in a really creative renaissance with The Witch from Mercury, with Hathaway. And honestly, even though I have some deep-seated problems with Requiem for Vengeance, I do think there's some interesting stuff in it.
I think Requiem for Vengeance. Oh man,
did we talk about that on a podcast, or did we just talk about it ourselves?
I may have talked about it while you were gone for one of my solo episodes. I don't remember. I have a lot to say about it because I think it is bad. But I feel like the worst thing about it is that it wasted all of its own potential.
No, I don't necessarily disagree with that. I don't think it's bad. I think the ending makes it bad.
Oh, the ending the ending destroys the entire thing for me.
And that's the problem with it, is because I think there's some really good stuff in it, and then the ending completely undoes it.
So it's only six episodes. The Mobile Suit Gundam Requiem for Vengeance is on Netflix. It is made in Unreal Engine 5 as a short series. And you can tell that it's made in Unreal Engine 5 because all of the mechanical designs and stuff look very good. I don't like the Gundam design in that either. I think it's kind of bad, but,
well, especially since it's supposed to be during the 1 year war.
Yes. It
so
is,
like, the design should be done. The homework should be done for you.
It uses a different prototype. They don't really explain a lot about it. It's fine. But yeah, all the mechanical designs look really cool when they're in motion, but all the humans look bad. And the story is it's a six episode series. And it takes four of those episodes for the story to start getting interesting. And then, oh, I'm now interested in this story. And then it ends in the worst, dumbest way possible.
Yeah, no, I honestly did not believe you. And I remember watching this and I was like, son of a bitch, he's right.
Yeah. Imagine.
Well,
because
you know me, I'm the eternal optimist. I tend to be a lot friendlier to stuff, but yeah, and but that said, I mean, there have been a lot of good projects coming from this franchise in the last decade. And
Witch from Mercury, I adored Witch from Mercury.
It's a top tier Gundam to me.
It's a show that when I watch the second half's end credits, there is a moment in that wells me up with emotion and a tear comes to my eye every single time. And I don't know, it's just a combination of the music and the movement and the animation. And it's just, it's beautiful watching it. It has also one of the best opening songs in the first half.
Oh, phenomenal. Show. And it's gorgeously animated.
It's so great. I love that show. And it's so nice to see that after having like 10 years of Iron-Blooded Orphans.
Which, I mean, I will say this about Iron-Blooded Orphans. I think the first season, like if you like that kind of grimdark Game of Thronesy kind of stuff, it's solid. I think the second season kind of undoes a lot of the good of the first.
It's just one of those things where there's weirdly been a lot of turnaround on it on the Reddit right now. And I think so much of that is largely, and I've even posted on the Reddit. So if you saw somebody posting this specific statement on Reddit, it was me. But because it was so many people's first Gundam series that they ever watched, and in a lot of cases, only Gundam series that they ever watched, it's the only one they talk about or know anything about. And the coolest Gundam they've ever seen is the Barbatos, which I absolutely
dislike that design. It's so over designed.
I don't like the Barbatos very much either. There are some other suits in that show that I'm more fond of. The Barbatos itself, I just don't care about. But because of that, there's starting to be some pushback. Like, and I'm not saying I've done this because I think every Gundam show is somebody's first Gundam show. And I
think, no, but this was kind of the next generation of Western, specifically Americans, like kind of rediscovering Gundam the same way they did with Wing in the late 90s.
Yeah.
And I think that was the kind of the same thing. And this one became very popular here, like Wing did. And like, even when you go to, well, at the time when you went to a store and you saw Gundam stuff, it was usually Iron-Blooded Orphans. Now there's at least enough like Bandai released, you know, you get like a Death Scythe and, you know, a couple other different designs here or there because they've made kind of ready-made figures that you can get at Target and Walmart now.
Yeah.
Which is wild. Like seeing Gundam stuff in a Target or Walmart is pretty fun.
This is one of those figures.
Yeah. And it looks good. I like it. I do agree with you. It's like Doctor Who. Somebody is somebody's first doctor. And the same way with Gundam. You know, so this is somebody's first Gundam show. Mine just happened to be the original because of you.
Yeah.
Well, no, I take it back. I did see Gundam Wing when it came out. My brother was a fan. I just didn't stick with it. But like the first time I really like sat down and watched Gundam was when we did it for the show, and that's when I became a fan.
what's funny about Gundam is that, you know, and this is actually something that is, you know, people don't really talk about because we all talk about, and I myself have included, have said, oh, Gundam Wing was the first Gundam to come out in the United States. And believe it or not, that's not actually true.
OAth Team come out here?
No, OAth MS Team did come out here, but it didn't come out until the second run of things.
Okay, so, gotcha.
So here's the story of Gundam in the United States. A couple of years prior to making, or to dubbing Gundam Wing, which would have been at the time about 5 years old, if I'm remembering my math right. I think Gundam Wing was 95, and it came out in the U.S. in the year 2000, which seems like a long enough period of time, but it was not. It's 5 years, man. That was what it took then. And now we get shows next day, simulcast.
Yeah.
What a weird world we live in. But
love it.
Believe it or not, they actually dubbed the original Mobile Suit Gundam movie trilogy on VHS and released it in the United States. This was done. I had seen it in stores, and because I had been getting into Macross through watching Robotech and all of this, I saw it in stores and I just never picked it up. I kind of heard tangentially about Gundam because when you're looking at, you know, anime robots on the internet, Gundam is going to come up, you know. It's much more common now in the U.S. than it was then, but I never picked it up. And I kind of wish that I had, because from what scenes I have seen of this original dub of Mobile Suit Gundam, it is wacky. So, for example, they don't call it Gundam. They call it Gundam, which is... Bright Noah, the captain of the white base, he is British in that. So there's a lot of people that just kind of think of Bright as being British. But the most notable thing about it is that Shar Aznable has a different voice actor, obviously, than he would later have. And that voice actor is Steve Bloom. Spike Spiegel, you know, Tom from Toonami. So there is the movie trilogy was translated. It wasn't very, it wasn't done very well. And of course, then it was just kind of quietly, it wasn't a huge release, obviously. And then when they released Gundam Wing in the US and Gundam Wing became hugely popular, then they started flooding, because another thing to think about this is, you know, Gundam came out in 1979. We're now in 2000, 2001. So we're at the 20-year mark, you know. And so they're gearing up for the 25th anniversary of Gundam at the time, called the Big Bang Project. And so they start just releasing a ton of stuff. Actually, hang on. I have pulled out my copy of Mobile Suit Gundam Side Story 0079 from the Sega Dreamcast. I want to see if it's got a Big Bang Project logo in it, because I bet it does somewhere.
Actually, this is a Japanese, so I won't see a project. Oh, no. Boom. Wait, hold on. Let me get this. So it says right here, Big Bang Project.
Big Bang Project.
On the Japanese PlayStation Shars Counterattack. For which I bought Drew about 5 years ago, and I still have not given it to him. It has been right here all this time.
but yeah,
it does say Big Bang Project on there.
Yeah, because all the VHS tapes and Blu-rays, DVDs that came out at the time all started with a Gundam Big Bang Project thing. And that's when we got, you know, the original Gundam series airing on Toonami, and we got 8th MS Team airing on the Midnight Run, and all of the other stuff starting to happen. Hang on. Sorry to put that away
before I forgot. No, you're fine.
There was also weirdness with that. So, like, they released the original series. The original series, I love the original Gundam series. Obviously, I'm surrounded by stuff from it in my little space here. But it maybe doesn't have the same ring to American kids in the year 2001 as it did in, the 1970s in Japan. And it did not do particularly well, and in fact it never finished its run on Toonami at the time. You had to find the DVDs that they eventually released, though other stuff did pretty well. It's not funny, but there's a reason that it got pulled from the air, Miles, in the year 2001.
I believe I know this one.
A particular event happened late in the year 2001, and that was used as a convenient excuse to remove a war-based TV show from the air, despite the fact that they were still airing plenty of other stuff that was like that.
Right.
But by that point we were getting releases of everything. They had weirdly they skipped Zeta Gundam and Double Zeta Gundam at the time. They jumped all the way from the original series and all the 1 year war side stories, 0080, 8th MS Team. They did 0083, Stardust Memory, which is sort of the lead in to Zeta Gundam. It's sort of a midquel that was made.
Did they do 91? Is that Thunderbolt?
Thunderbolt didn't come in. Thunderbolt's new.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought 91 was, what is 91? What am I thinking of?
I don't know what 91 is. F-91. You're thinking of Gundam F-91.
Yeah, F-91, yes.
It did get a DVD release, yes. And it's got a Blu-ray now, and I should watch it again. It's an interesting thing. But yeah, but they skipped Zeta Gundam and Double Zeta and went straight to Char's Counterattack, which I understand because it's sort of the beginning of the Sharon Amuro story and the end of the Sharon Amuro story. But when you skip the middle bits, especially Zeta Gundam, it doesn't really make a ton of sense. but
I remember asking you this when I watched Char's Counterattack for the first time, and you said that some of that doesn't make a whole lot of sense, period.
Some of it doesn't make a whole lot of sense, period. Partially because the Shars Counterattack movie is based on a two-part story, High Streamer and Beltorchica's children. But it's only the second part that they made into a movie. They skipped the first part. There's actually a very interesting thing, and it's not really, you know, true canon. It's actually a end cutscene to a Zeta Gundam video game on the PlayStation, possibly the one that's in your hands right now.
Oh my gosh. Are you serious?
When you beat the game, it has a sort of, because Shard disappears at the end of Zeta Gundam, spoiler warning for a show from 1985, and he does not appear in Double Zeta at all, and then suddenly he's back in Shard's Counterattack with all this stuff. But there is basically an animated cutscene at the end of that video game that sort of shows his reaction to the ending events of Zeta Gundam as what kind of pushes him to where he is in Shars Counterattack.
Which is where I think what I was asking you when I first watched, like, how did we get here? Yeah. And because we have no way of that first part of the, was it a novelization that Tamina did?
Yeah.
The
two novels.
Has that ever been translated officially?
I don't think so. Beltorchica's Children has a manga adaptation that is available now, but I don't think High Streamer has ever been officially translated. There have been fan translations that you can go and find, but I haven't gone through that. Largely because I've tried to read the Gundam novels, Awakening, Escalation, and Confrontation, and they're very dry in the opening chapters, and I just can't.
Well, and they also, I mean, Amuro dies in the novel, right?
Yes, he does.
Yeah. That's different than what we got.
it's a pretty different story. It's sort of like, you know, it's his George Lucas special edition, but
the one that people like.
but they never went back and really did anything with it again. Well, and that's the thing that's weird about Hathaway. Like, Hathaway is part one of a trilogy that we may see the second part of the trilogy next year, finally. But
Do you think Netflix is kind of slowly washing their hands of the franchise since they lost the movie? Because, like, obviously Requiem for Vengeance didn't seem to light the world on fire. They did not get the new show, did they get Witch from Mercury.
Well, Crunchyroll got Witch for Mercury. Prior shows to that were just on YouTube, weirdly. All the Build era shows. I think Studio Kara has had a deal with Amazon for all the Rebuild stuff.
Oh, you're right. Because, all that stuff did. Yeah, you're right.
I'm wondering if that has anything to do with it.
I could see that.
Yeah. So I don't know, but, you know, we'll see.
I love the first Hathaway movie, and I am very much looking forward to the second.
It's also hilarious because that's based on a novel that Tamino wrote in the early.
It's also very, very depressing.
In the late 80s, early 90s. Oh, it's real depressing. I don't know if I should spoil the ending of that. I'll do it off air in case anybody.
I know that, but, like, I'm kind of curious if that's going to be the case with these movies.
Who knows? That's the thing. We don't know yet. But it's also like they've done Unicorn and Narrative and all of that, and Hathaway ignores it completely. Just ignores it.
Good. Good. Everyone should ignore Unicorn completely.
That's not nice. You're not being a nice person.
You know, I think Unicorn is beautifully animated and has one of the most obnoxious, like, just, I cannot stand the protagonist in that series. Banaja Lynx is the worst.
Give bananas an easy time. Give him a break.
No, absolutely not. And I know that's another one where that's some people's first Gundam experience. And a lot of people really like Unicorn.
I never recommend Unicorn as somebody's first Gundam experience because it literally builds on every show.
Everything else.
Including, of all things, Double Zeta Gundam, ZZ Gundam, that a lot of American fans in particular don't like. I love it. I think it's great. But yeah, it's so weird that that was people's first. And you know what? It's fine. Doesn't matter. Like, we can't gatekeep this stuff. Like, if we gatekeep.
No. I'm not going to recommend someone see Unicorn. Well,
I think there is something to enjoy about Unicorn. So,
I mean, I can certainly see that. I can see why some folks might like it. It's certainly not my cup of tea at all. If I'm going to recommend something that's not UC, my gut instinct has always been the first season of 00. And I mean, now Witch for Mercury has shot up there. That show is just incredible.
Yeah, Witch for Mercury, I love. It is pretty different in terms of Gundam series. So it's like, it's one of those things where it's like, hey, this one requires no background knowledge, but I just want to warn you, it is pretty different than everything that's come before it.
But I think that's what I like about it is,
of course, I'm not disagreeing with that. I'm just saying, like, you can't guarantee that someone who gets really into Witch for Mercury is going to find, you know, love every other Gundam show because it's pretty different.
Yeah, I like when AU shows that are not connected to the initial Universal Century stuff, like, do something just like Turn A or 00 or, you know, just something very, very different. I think that's what those shows are for and should be for. And then if you want to do something that's very similar to Classic Gundam, then it should be a UC show. That's fine.
Speaking of weirdness and use in AU, Alternate Universe Gundam stories, Tubi has added their second Gundam series this week.
Really?
Like, a couple months ago, they got Gundam X. Like, Gundam X is this dark horse.
Is that After War?
After War Gundam X, yeah. It's an alternate universe series. It was the fourth of the original sort of, or I guess, yeah, because G Gundam was first, Wing was next, and no, After War was after that, I believe. I don't know. I'm probably forgetting something really easy. But anyway, it is sort of a weird alternate telling of the 1 year war story in its own right. And I haven't gone through, I'd never watched the series. I own it on Blu-ray, but you know me and using physical media. So I'm
aware.
I had started watching it. It just showed up on Tubi and it's like Crunchyroll, we thought, had all of the rights to Gundam. That is all in flux now because G Gundam's been up there and on Tubi, or Gundam X has been on Tubi for a couple of months now. And this week they've added the other like dark horse weird show that people are very all over the place on. Gundam Age is now on
Oh, Tubi. Really?
Yeah. Gundam Age is a weird one because it, there was a particular animation style it has that I'm trying to remember the name of, but it reminds me a lot of like the early 60s, like Astro Boy kind of super robot character designs. But it was telling the story of three generations of a family in this whole thing. And I watched the first and found the first very compelling. And then I fell off in the second and I heard the third. People did not like very much at all, but again, but of course with age, everything's kind of come around and, I kind of want to go back and finish that series. And it's all just on Tubi. Why Tubi is getting all the weird, weird
Tubi
shows.
Tubi gets some stuff. They really do. This is the one, that was co-written by the, president of, Level 5.
That's right.
And like when you see, the stuff that he's like done story stuff for, you're like, okay, this style kind of vibes with his whole thing.
Consequently, this Gundam Age is the first Gundam animation that my son ever saw. He was a baby in my arms as I was watching. So I was watching this subtitled on something. I don't even remember where I watched it at the time. Can't remember if it was legit or not now that I think about it, but.
Because this would have been after he did the story for Ni No Kuni, and certainly after he did all of the Professor Layton stuff. So I'm very curious to see the Gundam show that comes from that mind.
It's weird. Like, it's, you have the enemy force in it is the Vagans, and they don't explain a ton about the Vagans in the early parts, but you have this kid Flit, who his family has this sort of AI 3D printer that takes combat data, and where they are is attacked by the Vagans for the first time in decades, because they had a war in the past, and his magic 3D printer basically makes him a Gundam, the Gundam Age, and it's the first mobile suit that can defeat Vagan suits because they're super technologically advanced. And over time, we get into the second arc, which is Flit's son, Asemu, who has his whole own thing. And, you know, there's some interesting stuff that goes on with, like, the relationship with his dad, who has kind of been, as an adult, wholly focused on this conflict with the Vagans and, you know, maybe a little absentee and that sort of thing. And then we flash forward into the third arc with, I don't remember the kid's name, Asemu's son and Flit's grandson, who is the Kyo. I think it's Kyo. Is the name of the kid. I can't remember. I could be wrong about that. Don't care. And sort of him being sort of kind of parented by his grandfather because his dad disappeared because of some other character stuff that was going on, and his dad comes back as a space pirate piloting a pirate looking version of his age 2 Gundam. It's really weird and kind of flew too close to the sun. Like, the concept is great, but the execution wasn't where it needed to be is probably where I'd say. I'm rambling a lot. I'm sorry, gang. This is just
as soon as you told me that you had a plan for tonight, I was like, I'm gonna just get talked to about one of two things.
My plan for the night ended 5 minutes into the episode. I just wanted to talk about the G-Quux movie, and now I'm talking about Gundam Age of all things.
Well, I mean, it's a franchise that brings you happiness, and in this day and age, that's all we can hope for.
Speaking of franchises that bring me happiness, it was announced earlier this week the new, alongside a new song that has been performed by a number of previous singers in the franchise, the new Macross series is in production, and they are doing their nationwide talent search in Japan for the new idol singer in the show. This is the only thing that they have announced for it so far. We do not have a series name. We only know that it is being co-produced this time by Sunrise, aka the Gundam people.
Right.
So it promises to be pretty big and popular and pushed a lot when it comes out. So I'm very excited about that because I've been going through all the Gundam series on my own. I've completed my watching of Macross 7. I've completed my watching of Macross Frontier. I am in the middle of my watch of Macross Delta. And then I'm going
to
go back.
See, and I haven't watched any of it because I was waiting to watch with you.
I know. Trust me, Miles. We're going to watch it. We just got to figure out how to mechanically make it work. And that's something we're actually going to look at after we finish recording here tonight. But but yeah, I'm pretty big happy about it. Unfortunately, it's still probably at least a year away before we get anything else. And that makes me sad. I'm sad about that.
At the same time, you've got so much from the franchise. And I actually had a friend of mine, by the 4K of Do You Remember Love, and was talking about just how good it looked.
Was that friend me? Because I did that.
No, it wasn't you. That's the funny thing. It wasn't you.
I bought it, and I think it looks great. It looks way better than the 2016 Blu-ray that looked all weirdly smoothed out and stuff.
I actually had to come in and B, Drew, because they were, it was a group of friends, and they're like, oh yeah, this is a compilation of a retelling of the original Macross series. And I had to go, no, it's not.
Actually, it is not a compilation movie, my friend. Yeah.
And they're like, what? They were just basically like, well, whatever. And I was like, no, not whatever. There are very, very clear differences. In fact, I have an episode of a podcast. If you'd be interested, they weren't at all.
Whatever.
But they did send me like pictures of the case and the disc and everything. The packaging looks fantastic.
Oh, it's gorgeous. I haven't watched the entire thing yet because I got it and I was so excited and I put it on in my house just to have it on, and my kids were making fun of me so much. Like,
really?
It's partially
the Goblin King was roasting you.
It's partially because they don't get it. They don't know, you know, like, because I haven't been able
it's the kids that are wrong.
Yeah. And it's because I haven't been able to really raise them on this anime, you know. The anime they know is the mainstream, like Naruto and One Piece.
Right.
Demon Slayer and all of this stuff. And it's like, yeah, it's fine.
I really wish I liked Demon Slayer more than I do, but I just don't.
I mean, I wish I liked My Hero Academia more than I did.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, I did love Best Genist as a character concept in My Hero Academia, but it's the shonen style stuff that I don't really get down with that often. There's some exceptions. Like I love Dragon Ball Z. Who doesn't love Dragon Ball Z? But yeah, I know you don't. I kind of said that knowing that. But it's like, I don't know.
You know, I've been wanting to like revisit it because obviously my opinions change over time. And I think a lot of it had to do with like, I was getting really, really into anime when Dragon Ball Z became explosive and like no one would talk about anything but Dragon Ball Z. And so you kind of develop a little bit of a, and I didn't genuinely enjoy it. But our former co-host and buddy, Mike, you know, went through Kai not too long ago. And it did kind of make me want to go through this kind of abridged version that kind of cuts out all the nonsense. And because I will say I did genuinely enjoy the original Dragon Ball. I thought it was a super fun show.
Yeah, which a lot of people, because they started with Z, because that's what came out here, and they didn't get Dragon Ball until later. The shows are stylistically pretty different.
They are, like, I also like, because I love Tamina's style, but like I love Tamina's style in Dragon Ball because it also reminds me a lot of Chrono Trigger, which he did the art for,
which, and Chrono Trigger had an anniversary a couple days ago too.
Yeah, we are in the in fact it was just announced that, you know, there are supposed to be some 30th anniversary celebrations for Chrono Trigger outside of the world of games, which we'll see. But hey, why don't you let me buy that game on the Switch, please?
Or put it on the Nintendo Switch Online. I know. No,
I don't want that. No, I don't want that.
People have been clamoring for that like 2D, 3D, like, what was it? Octopath Traveler was the one.
I wish if they do a pixel remaster kind of situation, like they put on the Steam not too long ago, or if they do what the Dragon Quest has just done, that the kind of like 2.5D remake,
yeah,
of Dragon Quest 3.
I mean I don't know that I want that. Like I have the original mobile phone version of Chrono Trigger that I have played a ton. I actually beat the game on that. It includes a bunch of stuff that was introduced on, what was it, the DS version of Chrono Trigger or something that had like
both DS and the PlayStation had like the PlayStation one had like a little OVA worth, yeah, of, so like,
I have
stuff.
I have the PlayStation version as well. It's over there, but I'm not going to get up and get it.
Was
right
that
now.
Final Fantasy Anthology? I think
there was Collection and there was Anthology, and I can't remember which one was which because one had, five and
four,
six. Was it four and six, and then the other one had five and Chrono Trigger?
It's something like that. It's certainly
right.
Something
hang
like
on
that.
Vamp for a second, Miles.
Okay. I'm with Drew, to be perfectly honest. I think that game is stunning. When we covered it for the show several years ago, the one thing that really struck me is how gorgeous that game is. And I mean, it's always been pretty, but until you go back and like see the detail in the pixel art, I don't think that you can really appreciate what a tremendous artistic effort Chrono Trigger was. And I mean, Square obviously had great games that were on the Super Famicom or Super Nintendo, but I think Chrono Trigger, I think one of the reasons like everyone talks about so much outside of it just being a great RPG is that its style, the way it's presented, has stood the test of time because it's so innovative for role-playing game like storytelling, and its actual artistic delivery is unparalleled to anything at the time.
Yes, all of that is agreed. Final Fantasy Anthology was Final Fantasy V and Final Fantasy VI.
Okay. Was it Chronicles?
With the addition of CG cutscenes in the Tetsuya Nomura art style, which is gorgeous, but doesn't match up with what the game has at all. And then there was Final Fantasy Chronicles, which was Final Fantasy IV and Chrono Trigger.
Okay, cool.
I actually own Final Fantasy. I own this version of, hey, look, it's Goku. Oh, wait, no, it's not. That's Chrono.
It's just wild to me that a 16-bit game has load times.
Well, and that's the thing. So Final Fantasy IV in this anthology had new CG cutscenes, but Chrono Trigger had anime cutscenes.
Yes, it was in the incredible style,
it was so cool and so awesome, and they were really, really cool. But the only downside to it is the game had wicked load times for the time, and oddly, every time they've re-released Chrono Trigger of this version, which they did on the PSP and the PS and the Vita and all of this in their digital store, the load times were still there on the digital version.
Because they're direct ports. They didn't do anything to the game.
It's just like they couldn't do anything about the load times. But anyway, I own a lot of different copies of Chrono Trigger. I will probably buy it again if it's a cool new version that they come out with.
No, just give me a pixel remaster of that game on the Switch has the animated cutscenes.
The pixel remaster exists. It's on
Steam. I know.
Now. You can play it on your Steam Deck.
I said that. I just give that to me on the Switch with the give me a physical copy of this game and give me the OVA.
I actually don't remember if the Steam version has the anime cutscenes.
I don't think it does, but I could be wrong about that.
Does Chrono Trigger
on Steam? And you know, I think some of my friends, if they ever listen to this episode, might be a little surprised to hear me so passionate about Chrono Trigger, because I have been an active Chrono Cross like lobbyist for my entire life.
That version on Steam right now does in fact include the anime cutscenes.
I have it. I should probably download that onto my deck.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, anyway, gang, I feel like we probably rambled on long enough.
If you feel that way.
It's mostly
I always love bouncing around. I know we spent a lot of time on Gundam, which is never a bad thing.
I mostly feel guilty because I feel like I dominated the conversation.
Well, no, it's fine. I do want to take a little break and talk about something that I have very much enjoyed. Obviously, everyone knows that, not everyone, but anyone who's listening to this, I know any episode could be someone's first episode. If this is your first episode of the Mario Nerd, sorry. But I love professional wrestling. I love All Elite Wrestling. There was a pay-per-view this past weekend that finished a kind of a year and a half storyline involving Timeless Toni Storm. And it delivered in every way possible. I've even gotten Patrick into it, and he felt the exact same way. And he hasn't even watched this stuff live. And I remember telling Drew about Toni Storm's kind of gimmick, and he was like, okay, I'm way into that. So Toni Storm entered the company as kind of the rock and roll persona that she had in the WWE and the indies. She had won the AEW Women's Championship and then lost it. And after she lost it, she had been part of a group, and she started behaving erratically. And that slowly morphed into her becoming her new persona, her new character, which was evocative of the golden age 1940s Hollywood stars. And so she became timeless Toni Storm. Anytime she walked out, the screen would turn black and white. And she had like the kind of done up hair of the style. She spoke with the kind of like the kind of stuff you'd see like an Animaniacs of old Hollywood stars.
Yeah, with the not transatlantic accent. There's a name for that accent.
There is.
I can't remember it off the top of my head right now.
And the company went all in. They even had Ben Mankiewicz like introduce fake silent films that she had done. And he's even said, I have no idea what the hell I'm doing with AEW, but whenever they call, it's a very fun time. And so this has been an ongoing story. And she had a protege that they, an IRL, really close friend of hers, was a tag team partner of hers. And when they were both in the indies, they had roomed together, Mariah May. They did this whole story that was kind of based off All About Eve and whatever happened to Baby Jane, where the protege basically kind of betrays the star. And so Mariah May becomes the AEW World Champion for about almost a year. And recently they had her, after she lost the AEW World Championship, Toni Storm disappeared for about 4 months, came back as her oldest persona, her rock and roll persona, and believing she just entered the company and was pretending she was a rookie. And every interview, she's like, oh, I'm so excited to be here. And like, she let her Australian accent like really come out. And it was phenomenal. And then when she finally reveals the, like, because we all knew eventually this is leading up to like timeless Toni Storm coming back as a persona. But her whole thing is, the greatest performance you could ever give is as yourself. And so she reveals the entire time she's been faking. She pulls it over. She wins the AEW World Championship in Australia. And so they had like one last battle, which they called the Hollywood Ending, this past weekend. And it was so good and shockingly brutal. Like, they actually even do like the kickboxer putting the taped fists in glass and everything. It was insane. And it's honestly some of the best character work I have ever seen in professional wrestling. And honestly, some of the best matches have come out of this. And I know I kind of like rambled and didn't properly tell everything, but as someone who does love old Hollywood stuff and, you know, Turner Classic Movies and everything like that, and the fact that they went through the lengths of making these fake, like, old black and white movies. And still, when she appears, the screen turns black and white. And it's wonderful. And I remember like briefly explaining the gimmick to you, and you're like, oh yeah, I'm all in on this.
Oh, I love that. That sounds fantastic. That sounds extra. It's the right amount of extra that I personally look for and stuff like that.
Yes, it's what I want for my professional wrestlers. And like, everyone I was watching this with, and I was even texting Patrick, we're just like, this is one of the best women's matches I've ever seen. But it's also like, just the storytelling was there. I think it's what makes it work so well. It was wonderful. And I really just wanted to take some time and gush about that match. So if you have the option to see AEW Revolution from 2025, it should be on Max probably within 6 months. They are slowly putting everything back on there, you know, because it just started airing on Max.
Yeah.
I would imagine like in a couple months, this is going to be available for free. But yeah, I cannot recommend this pay-per-view enough, just for that alone. And there's even better matches. It's so good.
That's awesome, dude. rediscover things, Miles. I've been playing with this while you've been talking about that.
I know you keep distracting me. Like, look at this.
Yeah.
Here's
an ad for Final Fantasy X. Here's an ad for Final Fantasy: The Spirits Within the movie. Yeah, and then this that literally comes with a CD of music from Final Fantasy V and Final Fantasy VI. I love that. I definitely didn't remember that I had it. I'm curious what songs are on it, but also at this point, every song for Final Fantasy V and Final Fantasy VI is available on streaming. So it's like,
I remember back when I worked at the Stop of Games, when they re-released Chrono Trigger, I think on the DS, I don't know if it came with pre-orders or they just shipped us with the first people that bought it. There was like a 6-song CD that came out of like a symphonic suite from Chrono Trigger. And I stole one, and I wish I knew where it was now.
Ah, curses.
Because I mean, this is like 2005 or whatever, literally 20 years ago. And like, I'm sorry, I don't have any of that stuff right now.
You know, all of my CDs that I owned got stolen my senior year of college, apparently, except for this one. Oh, gang, it's been fun. It has been a blast tonight. Miles, thank you for hanging out with me and talking to me.
Oh, dude, thank you. I love it. I love doing these. I love these little moments.
We do them a lot more if we had a Patreon, which we should probably set up, but we haven't. So continue enjoying your free content, everybody.
We might set it up after like Cosmic Crypt finally like slows down. Maybe. And we have some bandwidth.
That's really the key. So with that said, gang, we are going to be back next week with the Wheel of Indies as we talk about Night in the Woods. I don't know what I was going to say there. Night in the Woods, that's next week, available on everything. It's currently available as one of the free games on PlayStation Plus. So if you not like to download and keep, but it's just part of the PlayStation Plus service that you can play.
Is it? Well, I think it's part of the Essentials tier, not the regular one, right?
I don't know. It's one of the extra tiers. It's not like the base tier.
Yeah.
If you have like...
The $10 tier.
You have to have the Double Secret Probation tier to get it, but it's part of that. But it's on a bunch of other stuff as well. So that will be next week. If you'd like to reach out to us, you can find us at themoreyounerd.com, where you can find this and every other episode of the show. You can go on Blue Sky and message us at themoreyounerd, and you can email us themoreyounerd@gmail.com. That's themoreyounerd@gmail.com. Also check out CosmicCrit.com. That is our sister show where we play the Starfinder RPG by Paizo. It's awesome. And if you go to CosmicCrit.com and check that out, you can also look in the upper right-hand corner of the Cosmic Crit website and find the link to the Cosmic Crit Discord server. And if you join that server, you can go on over to the More You Nerd section and talk to me and Miles all day. So with that said, gang, we're now going to end the show, as we always do, with a rousing...
Nerd out. Two nerd for y'all.
Anime cutscene.